Hi, I'm Susan O'Brien, and I'm a professor of medicine at the Chow Family Comprehensive Cancer Center, which is part of the University of California at Irvine. And we're here today with Soho Insider, for which I am an associate editor. And I'm talking to my guest, Dr. Kelly Coombs, who also happens to be from my institution and is an associate professor of medicine and also as a specialist in CLL. So we're going to talk today about some of the presentations that we heard at European Hematology Association meeting, which was just, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now in Milan. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
So I thought maybe we could talk about the update of the GAIA trial, which is also known as the CLL13 trial, which I think is a very important trial in terms of frontline therapy. So maybe you could comment on the design and the outcomes that we saw at the meeting.
Yes, absolutely. So I believe that the GAIA CLL13 trial may be the biggest study in CLL. I think was around 1,000 patients. Importantly, it was a four-arm trial that enrolled young, fit patients who would have been eligible for chemoimmunotherapy because the standard of care arm was either FCR or BR. There were three additional ven-containing arms to the study that patients could also be randomized to: venetoclax obinutuzumab, standard of care, a year of therapy; also a venetoclax rituximab regimen, and this is different than the Murano regimen because it was only 1 year of ven. Also, the additional regimen was the triplet of venetoclax, obinutuzumab, and ibrutinib. And so the study, interestingly, had a statistical design where they split the alpha to have two co-primary endpoints, first the undetectable MRD rate, and then additionally PFS. And so the oral presentation at EHA showed longer-term follow-up that I think had some unique and interesting findings. I'd say, as with what we've seen with pretty much most CLL studies, is that the effect of the novel agents is most potent or impressive against the chemoimmunotherapy arm among the unmutated patients. However, the difference between what we saw on earlier iterations of the follow-up and this longer follow-up is that the triplet regimen is offering an advantage over even the obinutuzumab and venetoclax arm for those unmutated patients. However, you know, and I think something that was important that came up during the Q&A, the IVO arm wasn't exactly 1 year for all patients. It could be anywhere between 1 year up to 3 years. And I don't know if you caught the median duration of therapy. I mean, I think most patients were able to stop after about a year, but in the end, it could have been longer for the patients who did not achieve the pre-specified endpoints. Importantly, for the mutated IGHV patients, though, all patients did well, but the patients who had the best outcomes were the patients who received venetoclax and obinutuzumab, whether with or without ibrutinib. And a finding that we knew before was, of course, that all of the ven-obin-containing arms were superior to CIT, but also were superior to ven-R, once again supporting our favored use of obinutuzumab in CLL over rituximab, the superior CD20 antibody.
Right. You're absolutely right. It was a very large study, over 900 patients. So I think you're correct. That's the biggest frontline study I've ever seen. And you're also right that, as I recall, if patients weren't MRD undetectable at 12 months on the three-arm regimen, they could actually continue the ibrutinib somewhat longer. Now, I don't know what the median duration of therapy was. That's an interesting question that wasn't in the slides, and it would probably be worth asking the investigators, because you obviously want to know how extrapolatable is it to IV as the currently approved regimen in Europe, although, as we all know, not yet approved in the United States. So the only fixed duration combo regimen we have right now is Venji, which is a great regimen, but as you pointed out, not as good for the unmutated for sure, and certainly not that great for the patients with P53 aberrations. I want to ask you a question, but I want to put it in context. So maybe we could talk about the AMPLIFY, which was not presented at EHA, but as you know, was presented at ASH and published in the New England Journal. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that study, because then I'm just going to ask a question kind of based on knowledge of both sets of data.
Yeah, I think AMPLIFY is important to talk about. I'm sure, as you're going to get to, it's a bit more relevant to what I think we would do in the United States now that ibrutinib is a bit less favored due to its less favorable safety profile. So So the Amplify study was another large trial, a three-arm design where patients who were, again, young and fit enough to get some type of chemoimmunotherapy regimen were randomized to receive either the standard of care arm of FCR or BR versus one of the two investigational regimens of either Acala plus Ven or Acala plus Ven with obinutuzumab. Importantly, these were fixed duration regimens for both AAV-containing arms, where patients got a two-cycle lead-in of Acala, and then it was 12 cycles of Acala plus Ven, and the triplet also had the six cycles of obinutuzumab. So that's the study design. The findings, just to briefly mention, is that both A plus V regimens were superior with respect to PFS over the chemoimmunotherapy arm. However, only A plus V was superior with respect to survival compared to chemoimmunotherapy. AVO was not superior, and this was largely due to an imbalance in COVID-related deaths, where a lot of patients in both the AVO and the chemoimmunotherapy arm had deaths related to COVID, whereas the number in the AV arm was pretty low. With all of that being said, I think it will be interesting to see how we apply that in the United States, and I'm sure you have some follow-up questions.
So, and you're absolutely right. I just want to point out that this trial was being done at the height of and the beginning of the pandemic. So where we had, you know, the variant, like the alpha variant, that was much more toxic than the ones that we have now. And at the time the trial was ongoing originally, of course, there were no vaccines, et cetera. So there was a big difference in the COVID deaths. When you censor for the COVID deaths that went away, I guess the question would be, yes, I don't think we're going to have a problem with COVID, at least the way it is now, but will those patients on the triplet wind up getting more infections overall? I recall that they did have somewhat higher rate of infection in general, but it wasn't that big imbalance compared to AV like we saw with COVID. So what I was going to ask you is, so we don't have IV approved, and we certainly don't have IV plus obinutuzumab approved. Presumably, pretty soon, we are going to have AV and we are going to have AVO. So I'm just wondering, in which patients, I'm assuming now for a lot of your patients, you're using Ven-G, because as I remarked earlier, it's the only finite regimen we have, fixed duration. So would you use AV? Would you use AVO? Would you stick with Ven-G? I'm assuming you wouldn't do IV because we don't have it approved. It might be a little bit harder to use. On the other hand, we know that the IV MRD undetectability rates are actually quite much higher than the AV, maybe because of increased exposure to venetoclax with the use of ibrutinib. So maybe you would say you would like to use a doublet without having to deal with an infusion, but you prefer to use IV. So just go ahead and give me your thoughts on this.
The way that I kind of conceptualize these two new potential options, which I actually do think are options now because they're listed in the NCCN guidelines as preferred, and obviously we'll have even less pushback from insurance when we see the full FDA approval, whenever that may come, is, you know, I still think Ven-O is probably the most potent of the time-limited regimens as far as the ones that I'm using as for standard of care. AVO, you know, probably is as potent, maybe more potent, but I do worry about the toxicity. And then in contrast, A plus V, I would say is probably a little less potent than VO, but kind of the opposite side of the coin is it offers a huge advantage with respect to convenience. And so where would I use each regimen? I think A plus V is attractive for those patients who are somewhat on the fence. They're interested in time limited, but they don't want something quite so time intensive at the beginning. I do have concerns with the lower rate of MRD, and so I may not be as excited about giving it to a young patient, especially if the patient had unfavorable markers such as unmutated IGHV. But I think for maybe a 70 plus patient who kind of values convenience over getting the deepest possible response, especially if they had mutated IGHV, I think A plus V would be very attractive. AVO, I would say I would reserve only for my extremely young patients who are in good shape, who also have predictors for maybe not having an optimal durability of their response to VO. And so the one patient where I did start the AVO regimen in my own clinic was in her 50s, had bulky lymphadenopathy and unmutated IGHV. And so those are, you know, clinical features that usually would predict for a shorter remission to Ven-O. I think adding that third agent probably is worth it in the right clinical context. However, you know, we had a long discussion about risk of infections. I do think we're past the worst of the COVID pandemic, but I always have a bit of mixed feelings with respect to the censoring analyses, because I don't think the patients who died from COVID wouldn't necessarily have been also vulnerable to some other infection. I don't think we really know. And I think another thing to point out with Amplify is these were really young patients. So the median age was 61. And so these were kind of already the fittest of the fit patients that enrolled on this trial to some extent. And so I do continue to have concerns about the toxicity, but I think with appropriate patient selection, making sure patients are vaccinated before they start therapy is critically important.
Yeah, I really agree with you on everything. And I think it's a fair point. Again, I agree with you. We're not going to have the problem with COVID anymore that like we did. But as we both said, would these patients get more other infections? It just wouldn't be COVID. So I think that's a good point. Anyway, I think we've really covered a lot and it was a great discussion. And thank you for participating in this podcast for SoHo Insider.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.